Court is ready to hear argument in our final cause, 110059, El Paso Marketing versus Wolf Hollow.
Court, Ms. Stevens and Mr. McFarland will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 4 minutes for rebuttal. Ms. Stevens will open with the first 17 minutes, and Mr. McFarland will present the rebuttal.
May it please the court. Your Honors, my name is Sean Stevens, and I represent Enterprise Texas Pipeline in this appeal. This is a case in which the Court of Appeals allowed Wolf Hollow to accept the burdens of an agreement, but accept the benefits of an agreement, but not the burdens that go along with it. And there are three reasons why this court should reverse the Court of Appeals. The first is this case sounds in contract and not in tort. The second is that regardless of whether the case sounds in contract or tort, the tariff, the transportation agreement, which incorporates a tariff, prevents recovery on this claim. And the final reason this court should reverse the Court of Appeals is the fact that the Court of Appeals misapplied this court's Seagull analysis to hold that the assignment of the transportation agreement released Wolf Hollow from its obligations under that agreement. But before we delve into those issues in any great depth, I would like to remind the court of just a couple of factual matters that are relevant to this analysis. And the first of those facts is that Wolf Hollow sued the supplier of the gas, El Paso, claiming that gas that was transported on my client's pipeline did not meet gas quality specifications in a tariff or statement of operating conditions. That tariff largely made up the transportation agreement between Wolf Hollow and my client, the pipeline.
What is the relationship between El Paso and Enterprise?
The relationship between El Paso and Enterprise right now is that we're in privity of contract on the transportation agreement, but that's only because Wolf Hollow has not reaccepted El Paso's offer of reassignment of the transportation agreement.
So Enterprise is no longer an affiliate of El Paso?
Enterprise is not an affiliate of El Paso.
But it once was?
Your Honor, long ago, El Paso actually owned the pipeline that my client owns, one of its affiliates, but they are not affiliates. Now, this is a summary judgment.
And was that true when the transport agreement was made?
The transport agreement was made, I think that El Paso's entity was originally a party to the agreement. But for purposes of this argument, the relevant issues are Wolf Hollow transferred that agreement, assigned that agreement to El Paso when El Paso became more than just its fuel supplier. It became its fuel manager and its agent. But that agreement was always subject to reassignment if fuel quality issues came up, like the issues in this case. El Paso tendered that reassignment so that it would put Wolf Hollow back in privity with my client. Wolf Hollow refused that reassignment. Now, everybody filed motions for summary judgment in this case, and summary judgment was sought by my client on several issues, including the fact that the limitations on liability in that tariff prevented recovery, that this was a contract claim and not a tort claim, and finally, that the tort claim should not be allowed to disrupt the risk allocations that the parties had worked out in sophisticated and integrated related agreements, although they were not all in privity at the same time.
Go ahead. You say it's a contract claim, not a tort claim, but not a contract claim against Enterprise, or yes?
It is a contract claim, not a tort claim against Enterprise, but Wolf Hollow only brought a negligence claim. So its negligence claim should be barred. And the reason
But your position is that Wolf Hollow has a contract claim against Enterprise.
Wolf Hollow had one. I'm sure that it's been barred by the statute of limitations by this point of time. That point was raised to them. They had the opportunity to amend. They never did. So it's just a negligence claim. And the reason we know that is that their claim, if you look at page 718 of this record, they quote the applicable tariff and says that it contains specific gas quality requirements, and it goes on to cite those. That's the basis of its lawsuit. That's a contract claim. Because as we know from this court's decision in 1999, when Justice Owens wrote for the court in DeWitt, a tort claim is precluded where a contract controls the activity at issue. Now, the court may recall that in that case, a property owner had an easement agreement with a utility, and the utility had the right to maintain that easement and apply herbicides, cut foliage, and when it cut down trees, The property owner sued in negligence, and this court said that that tort claim was precluded because the only reason that that utility was on that easement at all was because they had an agreement, an easement agreement, and it controlled the maintenance of that easement. And as a result, it was a contract claim and not a tort claim.
But if there were a contract claim asserted against Enterprise, your position would be that all that are sought are damages that cannot be recovered.
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor. And
why would somebody want an assurance of gas quality that could not be enforced?
Your Honor, there were, as these related agreements, and that really takes us into the second issue, there are a complex network of agreements in this case. There is a supply agreement between El Paso and Wolf Hollow by which El Paso sells it gas and then manages the supply of that gas. There's a transportation agreement, as we've talked about originally or previously, between Wolf Hollow and my client, then assigned by Wolf Hollow to El Paso and not accepted reassignment back to Wolf Hollow. There are letters of credit, there are operational balancing agreements, there are a variety of agreements, and they all have allocations of risk in all of them. And
it's one thing to allocate risk, it's another to say, I want to be sure this gas is of a certain quality, but there's nothing I can do about it if it's not.
Your Honor, I understand that. And what these parties did was allocate the risk so that not only did they allocate the risk, but they allocated the risk through a specific type of contract. We have a tariff in this case, which the Court of Appeals refused to, although it noted in its opinion that it needed to look at the business activity involved, it then failed to understand that this is a regulated entity. It's a regulated industry. And as a result, it must operate under its tariff. This transportation agreement is much more than just a contract. It's a tariff. It has the force of law. And it's important to note that that tariff pushes it operates in place of market forces, if you will. And as a result, the intention is to make the rates as low as possible for all customers. Inherent, the United States Supreme Court has said, in those low rates that customers are charged is the fact that there are limits on liability built into these tariffs. For example, in this particular tariff, there are limits of liability cutting off my client's obligations and responsibility at the inlet to Wolf Hollow's plant. There are limitations on the type of damages that can be brought. No non-direct damages, no consequential damages. Everyone agreed to that because they had to. It was in the tariff. And then there are indemnities. Indemnifying my client for all claims related to transportation. And that's because when people are putting gas into our pipeline, it has to meet quality specifications at that point in time and that meet the tariff's qualifications. So if there is a gas quality issue, then we are indemnified for that, and then they must go back to seek other remedies from sellers or other entities from whom they might be able to do it.
What are the direct damages to Wolf Hollow of using contaminated gas?
Well, Your Honor, we don't believe, first of all, we don't believe that there was ever any evidence that this gas did not meet specs. But I might add,
If it did, what would the direct damages be?
The direct damages would be gas that did not meet the specifications, but they didn't plead.
What would those damages be?
Well, as the Court of Appeals correctly pointed out, and as I believe El Paso will address this issue in their time before the court, they didn't plead any direct damages. They only sought the replacement of lost.
I'm just asking you, what would the damages be? What could they be?
Their damages, I'm assuming, could be what the cost of gas as it should have been, perhaps, if it was on spec, would be versus the gas that they paid for, the difference in those two things. They never pled that. They never sought that. What they did do, though, is try to, through tort claims, get remedies and causes of action that they could not have under this tariff. The courts have repeatedly held, including this court in Grant, that customers cannot enforce alleged rights against a utility that they couldn't assert in contract. That's because the utility's obligations cannot exceed what is allowed for by the tariff, and they can't customize their services or their rates for a particular entity, one who might have ultra-sensitive turbines, or one who has some cost pressures and wants a lower rate. They can't do that. They are stuck with the tariff that they've been given. But Wolf Hollow here is seeking to assert tort claims based on the transportation of gas. It's seeking to recover consequential damages which are prohibited under this tariff. And the United States...
It seems to me that the petitioner's argument boils down to this. They don't have to get any gas, as promised. They don't have to get the quality of gas, as promised. Even though they want those things, it's just there's nothing they can do about it.
Your Honor, that's not true. They always have the right to refuse the gas.
Well, and they can't refuse the gas, then they can't.
They can refuse the gas. Remember that they have two pipelines.
Power.
They have two pipelines connected to their plant. They could refuse the gas and take gas from the other pipeline. They never did that. They could. There are other remedies in the contract that if the gas is not of a certain specification, that they could go back and seek those remedies. But they never did that. They only sought damages that they couldn't do under the tariff. And what we have here is them violating almost 100 years of precedent from the United States Supreme Court and adopted by this court in O'Shawn and in Grant that says you just can't expand your remedies by tort claims that you couldn't bring through contract and you couldn't negotiate in a transportation agreement. And I think it's important to point out that a failure to hold Wolf Hollow to the terms of this agreement will dramatically impact this industry in Texas. I think that's ably pointed out by the 39 members of the Texas Pipeline Association in their amicus brief. But let me just draw the court's focus into this particular pipeline for a moment to show you the magnitude of what could happen and its effect on tariffs in this state. This pipeline begins way out in West Texas, out near Pecos, and it travels across the state for purposes of this argument till it gets to Granbury, Texas, to their plant. All those hundreds of miles, there are 2,600 entities that can put gas in and take gas out. If we are to allow them to assign their transportation agreements to their to third parties and then seek remedies that they couldn't get under their transportation agreement, under their tariff, we are dramatically impacting the pipeline industry in this state, and it will have a negative impact, I'm certain, ultimately on the consumers in this state. And that's a reason that this court should reverse the Court of Appeals decision. But there's another reason, and that's the fact that this court has told us in the Siegel case that when you can't escape your obligations under a contract merely by assigning that contract to a third party. In Siegel, the court said there must be an express release, an express intent to release a party from its obligations, and that has to be shown. But in this transportation agreement, there's absolutely no mention of what happens to Wolf Hollow's continuing obligations once it assigned that agreement to El Paso. And as a result, the Court of Appeals has inferred from silence an intent to release Wolf Hollow from its obligations.
What is it about the documents that assures us that Wolf Hollow did have a continuing obligation after the assignment?
After the assignment. In the transportation agreement itself, it's absolutely silent. And this court told us in Siegel, where there's a silence, you don't infer an intent to relieve a party of its obligations. There's no use of the word release, relieved. There's no identification of an obligation or a limitation on liability from which it's relieved.
How would a party be relieved of its obligations vis-a-vis an assignment, if you will? Under what circumstances? What would that look like?
They would say, this release, for example, the Siegel case, I think, is a great example of what you should do and what wasn't done here. In Siegel, there was an operating group, and they were all members. They'd all signed on to an operating agreement related to a lease and a well. And they agreed that if any of them wanted to withdraw from that operating group, they could assign their interest to another party, and that would relieve them of all interest related to their obligations on the well and the lease, specifically pointed out. However, the agreement was silent, as it is here, as to what happened to their obligations when it was assigned to a third party. Well, sure enough, one of those members of the operating group assigned its interest not to somebody within the group, but to somebody outside, a third party. And when that third party didn't pay its share of the operating costs, the operator went against Eland, the original assignor, and said, pay your operating costs. And Eland said, we're not responsible. We've assigned that out. And this court, Justice Medina writing for this court, stated that there was a silence as to what happened when it was assigned to a third party. And in the face of that silence, we would not infer the intent to release a party from its contractual obligations. And I think that that's especially true in this case, because not only is there a silence on what happens when something is assigned out to a third party in this contract, but it is fraught with the opportunity for abuse, especially when you layer on the flavor of this tariff. Here, we have Wolf Hollow getting the same benefits from this bargain that it got the day prior to the assignment. This is not a situation where Wolf Hollow sold its plant and assigned the new owner the transportation agreement. Instead, it is receiving deliveries of gas on a daily basis, just as it did prior to the assignment. The only difference is that it's now El Paso telling us how much gas to send over, as opposed to Wolf Hollow. This is fraught with the opportunity for abuse, because it allows them to get out of their tariff obligations and yet still rely on those obligations when it says you didn't meet the quality specifications. So it's completely inequitable. And furthermore, I think it's important to remember that the only reason that we are not in privity with Wolf Hollow at this point is that they will not accept the reassignment of the transportation agreement, which I anticipate El Paso will argue in its time that it is the exclusive remedy for these types of gas quality claims. And that's because it would put all the parties back in the positions that they anticipated when they drafted this complex web of interrelated agreements. So for any one of or for all of these reasons, we ask the court to reverse the decision of the Court of Appeals, because this is just a contract claim. The only reason we are here is because of the transportation agreement. We would not be transporting gas to that plant if it weren't for the agreement. This agreement has the specifications in it upon which Wolf Hollow relies for its claim. As a result, this is just a contract claim, not a tort claim. They never brought a contract claim, and as a result, it's barred. The second reason this court should reverse is the fact that the transportation agreement itself precludes these types of damages that they're seeking. It requires indemnities, and it precludes claims related to anything that happens past the delivery point. And finally, the Siegel analysis was simply wrong. It allowed the release of an obligation when the parties had not agreed to that. And as a result, we asked the court to reverse the Court of Appeals and reinstate the summary judgment in favor of Enterprise.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court. Mitchell McFarland on behalf of El Paso Marketing. We petitioned this court to correct an error that was created by the Court of Appeals when it deleted the declaratory judgment. But before I get started on that, I want to answer some of the questions. Justice Guzman, to answer your question, there are numerous instances in the gas supply management agreement by which Wolf Hollow can get this transportation agreement back, because it is actually the most valuable piece of this pie. We only charge a nickel to sell them gas. The transport agreement is very valuable because of the rates. And Justice Heck, to answer your question, if in fact Enterprise does not deliver according to the transportation agreement, they're paying a fee for the ride. So probably they have to get a discount if they don't get the right kind of gas. So there is that issue. Also, to answer your question, the pipelines that were owned by El Paso were transferred to Enterprise long before this case arose. And to answer your other question on 2.7, the damages for gas that they accept that wouldn't meet quality, the direct damages would be under 2.714 in regard to, that's the claim they would have to make against El Paso selling them gas. 2.714, breach of warranty, difference between the value of the gas as delivered and the contract price. But here what the ambiguity that's created by the Court of Appeals opinions when they deleted the declaratory judgments that go on. In other words, the damages ended on December 30th, 2008, which is the day of the judgment. However, the contract goes on till August of 2011, three more years. The declaratory judgment says your exclusive remedy is to take a reassignment of the contract and sue the transport under the transport agreement. The reason that creates an ambiguity is because, let's say a claim gets raised now. Well, El Paso is going to say, wait a minute, exclusive remedy, declaratory judgment, res judicata. Wolf Hollow will say, you're right, res judicata, the Court of Appeals deleted that. But there was no basis, either in procedure are reality for deleting it because they didn't address the issue. Had all the damages occurred before and our contract had been over, it simply wouldn't have been reached. There are other defenses that weren't reached. That's what should have happened. Here, though, they should have affirmed as to the exclusive remedy because it is an exclusive remedy. Once we reassign it to them, we are no longer in breach and they have their remedy. And here's the remedy they asked for in their counterclaim, in the record at CR 211. They asked for the reassignment in their counterclaim, but yet they never would accept it. And we ask you then to correct that aspect of the Court of Appeals opinion to undelete the declaratory judgment aspect as it applies to the declaratory judgment establishing the exclusive remedy for Wolf Hollow in the case of a gas quality claim. And the logical basis for that is that we can't breach that contract. We have no control over the molecules. We nominate in Pecos, it comes out in Granbury. Enterprise is the only person that can control the molecules. We are only in breach the way the contract is constructed. We're only in breach if Enterprise doesn't live up to their tariff. There's nothing we can do about it. So logically, the parties negotiated. Okay, if that happens, then we shall reassign the contract to you. It's mandatory. We have no choice in the matter. We shall reassign it. And we tried. As soon as this issue came up on quality, wrote them a letter. It's in the record. We'll reassign our claim, the claim under the contract, if you can have it. Instead, we ended up having to sue for declaratory judgment. They counterclaim for damages, all of which were consequential because they, throughout their briefing, they said, we've never claimed direct damages. So we request the court to correct that part of the Court of Appeals opinion with regard to the declaratory judgment so that they will continue so we can be protected while the statute of limitations run on any further claims. Thank you.
Thank you, Counselor. The court is now ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Ms. Southwick will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court, good morning. At the outset, I'd like to point out that Enterprise suggests that Wolf Hollow had a contract claim. It suggests that now, but in the trial court, its answer, it asserted, quote, Wolf Hollow has assigned and relinquished any rights it may have under the transportation agreements. And in its motion for summary judgment that the trial court granted and that is on appeal here, it argued that Wolf Hollow no longer has any rights under the transportation agreement. So I would argue that while it may say now that Wolf Hollow has a contract claim, it denied such a claim in the trial court, and it did so successfully. It received summary judgment on that ground. Enterprise has challenged Wolf Hollow's negligence claim on two separate but essentially related grounds. The first is that it argues that the claim is barred directly by the party's contracts. And then it argues that the claim, if it's not barred directly by the party's contracts, it's barred by Texas law because those contracts exist. While each of these claims has a superficial appeal, I would suggest that neither one holds up under closer examination. The Court of Appeals correctly noted, and Enterprise has conceded, that there is no contractual privity between Wolf Hollow and Enterprise. So how is Wolf Hollow barred by their contracts? Enterprise really brings up a sort of fairness argument. It attempts to inject in this court's mind a kind of discomfort with the assignment that took place in the case. And it also refers occasionally and sort of generally to El Paso as Wolf Hollow's agent. A review of the contracts between the parties makes clear that the Enterprise's proposed interpretation is contrary to the agreements between the parties, and it really would lead to an unfair result in contrast to Enterprise's position. When Wolf Hollow decided to build a power plant in Granbury, it decided first that it needed to ensure a stable supply of natural gas. So it went to the available pipeline, which was then owned by an El Paso affiliate, and it negotiated a deal to obtain natural gas for its power plant. It's clear from the record that at the time of these negotiations, from the very beginning, both Wolf Hollow and the pipeline understood that Wolf Hollow intended to assign whatever transportation agreement it reached to a third party for gas management purposes. In other words, there was nothing ever underhanded or nefarious about the decision that Wolf Hollow made to assign the transportation agreement. It was, in fact, contemplated by the parties.
How does the Siegel case that Ms. Stevens referenced impact your analysis here?
Siegel case.
In terms of escaping the obligations by that assignment to that third party.
Well, as I'm going to point out, Your Honor, the transportation agreement here and the assignment itself makes very clear that Wolf Hollow's obligations, it's relieved of its obligations by the terms of the assignment. There are many places in the transportation agreement, in the tariff, and in the assignment itself that make clear that once the assignment has taken place, El Paso stands in the shoes of Wolf Hollow, and Wolf Hollow is relieved of all of its rights and obligations under the transportation agreement. So that applying the Siegel analysis, one would reach the decision that Wolf Hollow is relieved of its obligations and no longer is bound by them.
Ms. Stevens said it was silent, so I guess you disagree that it's
I disagree
silent.
Quite vehemently, Your Honor, that it is silent. As the transportation agreement was effective as of July 2002, it expressly provides that Wolf Hollow may assign, quote, its rights and obligations under this agreement to any party that provides fuel management services or agrees to sell and deliver gas. Thus, not only was the agreement designed to be assignable, it was also designed to be assignable to a party that provides fuel management services, which is precisely, as the court realizes, the role that El Paso filled. The tariff, which Enterprise relies on heavily, also expressly contemplates an assignment of the transportation agreement. The provision states that the agreement between shipper and transporter, which are actually they're defined terms and very important to this argument, the agreement between shipper and transporter, including without limitation each indemnification, shall inure to and bind the permitted successors. It further provides that assignment without approval of the counterparty will not relieve the transferor of its obligations. And that, as the court knows, is what the Court of Appeals primarily relied on in determining that because this assignment was with approval, it did relieve the transferor of its obligations.
How do you answer the amicus interest in the case? How do you answer the amicus interest in the case, the pipelines?
The amicus pipeline and the idea that somehow Wolf Hollow is attempting to subvert the intent of the parties here. That's their primary argument, is that this is not a bargain for result. In fact, because all the parties knew at the time Wolf Hollow negotiated its deal for the transmission of natural gas, that Wolf Hollow was going to assign the transportation agreement that it arrived at to a third party, the parties could have easily ensured that the limitation of liability provisions survived that assignment. And they didn't. No one made any effort to take the limitation of liability provisions and separate them and ensure that Wolf Hollow continued to be bound by them. They had an opportunity, as I said, as I made my point earlier, that everyone knew from the very beginning that Wolf Hollow fully intended to assign the transportation agreement once it was entered. And in fact, the transportation agreement, this is really just an interesting point, was assigned before it was even finalized. The assignment occurred before the transportation agreement was even executed. The transportation agreement itself and the tariff limit the liability between the transporter and the shipper. The transporter being the gas pipeline, the shipper being El Paso. Wolf Hollow is an end user, and there is no limitation of liability against Wolf Hollow. The contracts could, if the parties had wanted them to, ensure that Wolf Hollow had no, or their limitation of liability provisions precluded Wolf Hollow's negligence claims, but they didn't do so. Enterprise has also never argued that the parties did intend to bind Wolf Hollow and that they tried, they've never pointed to a provision in the transportation agreement or in the tariff that would extend the limitation of liabilities beyond the assignment. That is, there's no indication that the parties intended that Wolf Hollow would remain bound by the limitation of liability provision beyond the assignment. They argue that now, but there's no indication in the record that, there was any intent on the part of the parties at the time that the contracts were negotiated that that was the case.
But it seems odd that you would agree to those limitations and then by assignment escape.
I agree, Your Honor, it does seem odd. It seems there's an emotional barrier to that. But it is the case that these were very sophisticated parties who understood at all times that there would be an assignment, and no effort was made to ensure that these provisions bound the assignor after the assignment. And Enterprise points out in its brief that there are a couple of clauses that do survive the assignment, indicating that the parties knew how to ensure that clauses would survive assignment, but they didn't ensure that the limitation of liability provisions would survive assignment. And as I pointed out, it's not a bargain for result that Enterprise would not be liable in negligence to anyone. They really are. Their bargain is that they will not be liable in negligence to the shipper, and not that they won't be liable in negligence just generally. It's also the case, as Enterprise's counsel pointed out, that El Paso, as shipper, has certain indemnity obligations. So it's not true that that's another answer to the question regarding the industry problems. It's not true that Enterprise would be without recourse in the event that a negligence claim against it is successful.
Why aren't the damages claim for the bad gas quality consequential?
Well, Your Honor, our argument is that in a negligence case, it doesn't matter whether they are consequential or not. I think that we concede that some of the damages would be consequential if examined under the UCC, as the Court of Appeals did.
But you don't concede that with respect to the interruption damages.
That's correct, Your Honor.
You say those are cover and direct and recoverable contract or tort.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But on the gas quality damages, some of those are consequential.
Some of them are. The damages regarding injury to our plant would be considered consequential. Damages regarding the fact that the failures in deliveries necessitated us to go out and buy power on the market to cover for the requirements of our contracts were direct damages. Council has, I made the point earlier that there is an argument in here embedded in Enterprise's position that El Paso acted as agent of Enterprise. And I would like to make clear that that's not the case. It was not really ever argued in the courts below. And as the court knows, the defining feature of an agency relationship under Texas law would be the principal's control over the agent. I'm guessing without knowing that El Paso would urge against a finding that it was acting as Wolf Hollow's agent. An agent is one who's authorized to transact business on behalf of another, and the existence of an agency relationship is a question of fact. So it really wasn't raised in the case. It's also not true here when, although El Paso did act as the gas supply manager for Wolf Hollow, it did not do so as its agent. It owned the gas as the gas was going through the pipeline. So it purchased gas, delivered it to Wolf Hollow, and Wolf Hollow purchased the gas from El Paso at the time it was delivered to the plant. It was never acting truly as an agent. Therefore, any effort to impose the terms of the contract between Enterprise and El Paso on Wolf Hollow sort of as a principal should fail. There's another mistaken theme in Enterprise's arguments that involves the sort of contort idea. This is the argument that Wolf Hollow should have brought a contract claim. And as I pointed out in the beginning of my argument, Enterprise always rejected that point of view in the trial court, arguing that we had no contract. We don't disagree with that. We are not in privity of contract with Enterprise. We had no ability to bring a contract claim against them. Therefore, all the cases on which they rely for the idea that this is truly a contract claim, Exxon versus Kinder Morgan and Southwestern Bell versus Delaney, all of those cases are inapposite because they involve parties in contractual privity with one another, which causes the negligence claims to fail. The enterprises also raise the economic loss rule. I would argue that rule doesn't apply here either. This court recently found in Sherland Water Supply that the mere fact that an action was based on a contract does not shield the actor from claims for negligence. In this case, Wolf Hollow, although it's often characterized as off-spec gas that we are arguing about, we really have alleged that some sort of mishap occurred in the pipeline that caused both interruption in supply and also contaminated the gas. So it wasn't so much that it was off-spec, but that it was actually contaminated with something that shouldn't have been there at all. The Court of Appeals correctly held that Enterprise was not shielded from tort liability if it negligently performed the contract between itself and El Paso. With regard to El Paso's arguments about the Court of Appeals deleting the declaratory judgment, I'm not sure that this court needs to step in to hold that a contract that is now expired contains provisions.
Are the rights under the contract expired, though, or are they still within the statute to assert some of the rights that they could have asserted had the court?
You're correct, Your Honor. Certain rights may be asserted at some point. The statute of limitations is still has not run completely.
So given that, was the Court of Appeals then still correct to take the action that it did?
I believe it was, Your Honor, because it had decided all issues that needed to be decided. It decided on a narrow ground.
What about issues that hadn't been raised yet?
They were raised, Your Honor. They just weren't reached. They were other grounds for affirming the trial court. And the Court of Appeals affirmed on a single ground that was sufficient to affirm all causes of action. And therefore, it didn't need to reach the additional alternative grounds. And an order requiring that a court of appeals reach every ground would be contrary to this court's precedent and also to Texas rules of appellate procedure. I've completed my argument. If there's no further questions, I'll give the court back its time.
Any further questions? Thank you, counsel.
The only reason that Wolf Hollow is asserting a negligence claim is because it is running away from the mandatory assignment of the gas transportation agreement back to it under Section 14 of the contract when there is a problem with gas quality.
If it had never had a contract with Enterprise, could it sue Enterprise for a tort?
Probably not, because there wouldn't be any duty owed to them by Enterprise. Let's assume that El Paso made the contract with Enterprise in the first place, and they were delivering gas to the Wolf Hollow valve. Wolf Hollow has at that point, then Enterprise would owe no duty to Wolf Hollow. They would have no interaction with them. Their only duty would be to El Paso under their transportation agreement.
No matter if they were responsible for the gas contamination, they would have no liability to Wolf Hollow?
No, because the only reason that Enterprise ever delivers a molecule of gas is because somebody has contracted with them to do it. Now, I'm not talking about a situation where there's like a pipeline rupture or something like that where there's a duty to the public. I'm talking about a situation where contractually you've wanted to deliver gas from one location to the other, Here, let's assume that contract was directly with El Paso and that Wolf Hollow was never a party. Well, at that point, then, Wolf Hollow couldn't sue Enterprise because there'd be no duty owed to them. They would have no privity of no interaction at all because it would all go to El Paso. And then El Paso would cross-claim against Wolf Hollow as it did in this case. So that's why they have no contractual claim. And counsel's argument about, when Justice Heck, when you ask about what happens during the interruption period, when they have an interruption, which is actually, they have an interruption the whole time because, not just the brief times, but they shut the plant down so they could repair it. Well, they're not taking any gas. Well, they're buying power to fulfill their contracts with their customers. Classic consequential damages. Cherokee County Cogeneration versus Dynegy. In that case, the parties conceded at oral argument. Cherokee County did. They're a power plant, just like Wolf Hollow. Dynegy's a marketer, just like El Paso. Conceded that if they were trying to recover on their collateral contracts, that would be consequential damages, which is what Wolf Hollow is doing here. Direct damages are always the same, no matter who the parties are. In other words, we can swap out the parties in this case. We could put in Kinder Morgan and Cherokee County Cogen. We could put in Reliant and El Paso. The direct damages are always going to be the same. That's because they're governed by the Uniform Commercial Code 2712, 713, and 714. However, when you have collateral contracts, those are going to vary with the circumstances. And when there are collateral contracts and you're claiming damages as a result of that, those are always consequential damages, has been held by this court and many courts in this jurisdiction.
Why isn't trying to obtain power from elsewhere covering?
I'm sorry? It's not covered because, well, for a couple of reasons.
Why isn't it?
Why is it not covered under 2712, other than the fact they never asked for that until they got here? But to answer your question, it's not gas. It's not fungible. In other words, you can only cover with a good that is basically fungible with the good that you didn't get. Here, gas, they didn't try to get gas, number one. Number two, and much more important, this contract was governed by New York law. In New York, power,
wholesale power,
is not a good. And in many states, it's not considered a good. So definitely here, it's not a good. And there's no equivalency between electricity in the wholesale market and natural gas under a contract like this. So Wolf Hollow is attempting to create a negligence claim that it is simply creating because it doesn't want to accept its responsibilities that it agreed to under the contract, which the trial court found and which the Court of Appeals should have affirmed and which this court can affirm because it's a question of law, of contract interpretation, and should affirm the trial court and correct that part of the Court of Appeals opinion.
Are there any questions? Thank you, Mr. McFarland and counsel. That concludes this argument. The cause is submitted, and we are finished with all arguments this morning. The marshal will adjourn the court.
Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas, now stands adjourned.